I wanted to really to talk a little bit about kind of group family business. The people who are here who don't come regularly to our group meetings, just remember this nice poem by Rumi, which he writes about sitting with the Sufis. Be with those who mix with God as honey blends with milk, with those who say anything that rises and sets, that comes and goes is not what I love. So I was thinking this morning at 5:30 when I was meditating about the gathering, I was thinking it's a little over 50 years since Mrs. Tweedy arrived in a horse-drawn tonga at this house in this industrial town in northern India, and saw walking towards her this tall, elderly Indian man with a long grey beard with these eyes swimming in golden light. And in many ways, that's where our story begins. And yet, for me, it also began almost over 40 years ago when I was in a lecture in South Kensington Library and was introduced to this elderly Russian lady with her white hair tied up in a bun who looked at me with one glance from her piercing blue eyes, and I had this very visceral physical experience of becoming a speck of dust on the floor. And that is in a way part of our journey, a journey that actually began really 800 years ago when Khwaja Yusuf Hamadani, one of the very early masters, left Baghdad, which was the center of Sufism at that time, and with a number of companions walked 800 miles to Bukhara. And there his disciple came, Abdul Halik Hujwani, who really laid the foundation for what was to become the Naqshbandi path, who gave us the principles of the path and the silent zikr that are really the hallmark of this Naqshbandi path that we follow. And so in a way, it is a journey. It is an individual journey we each make. It is also a group journey. And I was very aware this year, I was thinking, look, there are many of us, many people sitting here who've been for many years on this path. And I should really talk about a little bit about what that means. I should first say that when somebody is interested in this path, really seriously interested, the first 2 years are traditionally a probationary time when somebody inwardly looks at you to see if you are really serious, because this path is not for spiritual window shoppers, it's for those who really want to make a commitment to what is real within the heart, to this love that belongs to God, to live it. So the first 2 years are really a probationary time to see if that person is interested before they get given inwardly what they need to continue the journey. And then really the next few years you make a foundation to this path. And recently I was aware, talking to Justine, that there were a number of people in our London group who'd only been coming to the path for a few years. And so I wanted to make sure that they actually had this foundation. And we had a 4-week course, which some of the young people came to. And when I say young, well, anybody below 40 is, I guess, young. When I first came, if you remember those who were Tweedy, she had this differentiation between the golden oldies and the spring fevers. And anybody under 30 was a spring fever. The group then was clearly divided between those under 30 and those over 60, and there wasn't much in between. Anyway, for those who've just really the first few years on the path, one focuses on really taking spiritual responsibility for oneself. That this is an incarnation you have to use to I don't like to use the word get somewhere, but to really to make an inner commitment and to live that commitment. And you only have a certain number of years to do it in. One really realizes how precious an incarnation, how precious a life is. And so at the beginning, it involves really taking spiritual responsibility for yourself, for your life. And then we had the second of these gatherings was focused on transformation of the shadow, work on the shadow, because that is, in a way, the entrance door to inner work. This path has always traditionally been about psychological purification, going right back to the early Sufis, to Al-Hakim At-Tirmidhi, who wrote the first psychological treatise on Sufism. And that's why Mrs. Tweedy said when she went to India, she expected instructions in yoga, she expected spiritual teachings, but what he did was to force her to face the darkness within herself, and it almost killed me, she said. And so this is really, you need to do the first few years, you work on the shadow. The shadow comes up, your resentment, anger, all of those neglected and rejected feelings, and we created in the West a container of dream work and also Jungian psychology, which understood this transformation of the shadow, making lead into gold. This work on one's own feelings of failure, however the shadow is for you. And if you don't do that work in the first 5 or 6 years, you don't have an inner foundation. You don't have an inner vessel that you can use for the real transformative process of oneself. Much of the work you do later just gets wasted, it gets diluted, it gets lost, because you don't have an empty bowl into which anything can be poured. And as I say, I don't teach it so much anymore. I did many years ago, gave lectures and seminars on transforming the shadow, but it's something that I expect people who come to this path to do in the first 4 or 5 years. It's really to look at their own darkness, their own faults and failings, and to do that inner work. Later you do like housekeeping, like the dusting and vacuuming the corners, but the initial work is done in a much more focused way. And then we had another session on discipline, because you need discipline. This is a serious venture. You know, it's a lifetime's commitment. You're making gold out of yourself. You're reaching what is highest that a human being can possibly reach and realize in this life. And for that, you need discipline. You need to meditate every day, 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years. You need to do the zikr. You need to live according to certain principles. And if you don't have a certain discipline, go and do something else. You need discipline. Some people have more discipline than others. It's just something you need to do, because if you don't, again, it's really a waste of time. The nafs, the lower self, other stuff just comes in and pollutes, and you can't live the path. And then the last of these 4 sessions that we, Justine, did was on adab, which is something over the years I've stressed again and again, spiritual courtesy, the right behavior. The inner behavior and also the outer behavior. A certain quality of respect, a certain quality of integrity, which is really a way to be with God. I always think it's in the Bible when God said to Moses, take off your shoes because this is holy ground. It's a way to live with respect for the teacher, with respect for the group, and really with a respect for the divine within yourself. If you don't respect that, if you don't live that according to certain principles, and as you know, part of my work has been to take the teachings of this path and slightly adapt them or rephrase them so they're accessible for people in the West. And that's why I've written about adab, what it means. It's not like Baisab had to live it. It's not like it was lived in India. I remember having a discussion with a Naqshbandi Sufi master in Delhi, and I acknowledged, look, we cannot live the Adab that you live in India, in the West. If you remember, Baisab couldn't even address his elder brother directly. Had to wait till he was spoken to. When you read Mrs. Tweedy's book, the way she would speak to Baisab, would ask him questions, was completely foreign to the Indian spiritual Adab. So certain things have been changed, but the inner Adab has to be lived. Otherwise, you don't have the right attitude. And Sufism is a way of life that requires the right attitude. And Justine's going to have another set of four on the principles of the path, which is the principles from Hujjavani, awareness of breath, solitude in the crowd, watch your step, what that means, how you live them. This is the foundation of a way to live this path. And just like building a house, if you don't have the foundations, it all comes down after a while. So as a group, as a path in the West, as I say, the traditional foundations of Naqshbandi Sufism have been rephrased, translated, to make it accessible, but they are necessary. And say, for the people who've really just come to the path, you need to become completely familiar with them, because we don't, on this path, as you know, we're going to get a lot of practices, but we get certain very clear principles. Silent meditation, silent zikr, say adab is very important, and the principles of the path, which are now accessible for us to live. But as I said, many people here have been on this path for more than 10 years. And by then, that work should have been done. If it hasn't, I'm not quite sure what you're doing. You know, after you've been on this path for 10 years, if you're serious, if you're not just a, what the Sufis call a traveler on the road of intent, you should have certain practices that are completely natural to you, that are your way of living. The meditation should be just something that you do. It is like having breakfast in the morning, you meditate. The zikr, you should be completely familiar with. Repeating the name of God should be just how you are. If you haven't done it in 10 years, yes, we all have bad days. It's like I, you know, say to my chiropractor, he gives me a certain set of exercises to do every morning, and you know, there are a couple of days in the week which I don't do them because I wake up in a bad mood. Sure, we all have off days, and you get a headache and you don't really want to meditate, and that's fine. But 5 days out of seven, 11 months out of 12, this is what you are. Sufism that we practice is a way of life. It's not something you do on the weekend. It's not something you do on a retreat. It's something you are. It is a way to be. It creates a container, really, for the grace of God, for the grace of the tradition. Otherwise, you can't live it. Otherwise, do something else. After 10 years, that should have been completely ingrained in you. It is, as I say, it is a way of life. These principles, awareness of breath, of solitude in the crowd, outwardly being with people, inwardly being with God. It is the way we Naqshbandis live. And through that, through those practices, this extraordinary process of the inner transformation of a human being can take place. You're not asked to do very much. As I always say, I know other paths where they have to do 5 hours of meditation a day. But for us, it is more a way to live. And after 10 years or so, that should be the way you live. I was thinking, kind of half-joking, I said, well, there are people who've been here even longer than that. You know, what happens after 20 years? What happens after 30 years? And I've been doing it for 40 years. Like, after about 30 years, there isn't really much of you left to do anything. There's just a little bit of dust. And you know the story Attar tells of the mother who's lost her child, and she goes looking, can't find her child anyway, and she comes upon a group of Sufis, and she says, have you seen my child? Is he with you? And they said, well, I really hope he's not with us. Because if he was with us, it's not just that he would be lost. his name would be erased from the book of life. There would be nothing left, because that is what this path is about. You know, for many years I wanted to have written on my gravestone, he was lost in the company of those who are lost in God. This path is about extinction, is about everything going so much that you think, oh yes, there was this person, I remember them. What's happened to them? Who knows? To 30 years, it's just a little bit of dust. A name scrawled in the sand that the ocean comes in to remove, because this is a path of extinction. This is a path of nothingness. If you really want to live what this path is about, as Bysop said, there is nothing but nothingness. It's about that essential core of non-existence within the human being. And you need to have done those 10 years to have 15 years of living this path as it comes to you to create a container to not be, to experience that tremendous inner relief, inner freedom, inner, it's even beyond bliss, it's beyond ecstasy, it's just wow, that you really don't have to be anymore. And it is really the state of bakar, a state of abiding in God. That there are people on this path who've done their practices, and I've seen them being taken to these states, even if they don't know it, because who is there to know it? But something in the human being is freed from the fetters of existence. Only then can you really get the whole joke about it all, the craziness of it all, the, in a way, the meaning of it all. That is where this path goes. That is the end of the road of no end. But into the whole complete freedom of non-existence. But that comes later, and the beginning, you begin to taste this quality of love, this quality of bliss, this quality of belonging. I am the companion of he who remembers me. It's a deep, deep belonging. We live in a culture in which there is so much alienation, isolation, people feel they don't belong, and we belong. We belong. As a group, we belong together. Somebody came recently from South America, a sweet young woman. She was a yoga teacher, and I just looked at her, and she came to stay at the center. And I just said, you belong with the Sufis, and the Sufis belong with God. And it was so simple, it was so clear. You belong with the Sufis, and the Sufis belong with God. And we belong. It's like written somewhere. We belong. We belong together, and we belong to God. Once you realize the magnificence of the human being, I was fortunate or graced, because when I was 23, Bysa woke me up on the plane of the soul, and I saw what we are made of. I saw the incredible bliss and light and beauty that is a real human being. And I saw human beings after that from that perspective, not from that immortal part of ourselves. Trailing clouds of glory, do we come from God who is our home. And that's what we're really like. And this path is an opportunity, is a vehicle, is a way, is a journey to realize that, and then to go beyond that. But there has been a shift, and I want to talk a little bit about this to give you context. That's why I talked about this journey that began 800 years ago, when Yusuf Hamadani, the great, great master, went from Baghdad to Bukhara, and laid, from there there came the foundations of this Naqshbandi path. For many years, for the last 22 years since Mrs. Tweedy retired, my responsibility has been to look after the path, to make sure you all have access to what you need to have access to, that you get the energy, the grace, the help, the container, that whatever's happening in the outer world, this path remains pure, clean, undiluted. It can take you where you want to go. She brought it to the West, and my work that I was given was to establish it in the West, both outwardly and inwardly. And the outer form is the groups that we have in different parts of the world, Australia, Germany, Switzerland. They're very specific parts of the world. and inwardly to make sure that the energy, the transmission, the love, the grace is there for you, for your soul. And that's, of course, one of the purposes outwardly of meeting two or three times a year on the physical plane, is so that you can get this transmission, because that's really the essence of the path, is this transmission. That it gets given to you because you need it to go home. You need a certain energy to go home. And it's a very particular energy. As you know, the frequency is golden yellow. The color is golden yellow. And it works through love and it works in the heart. And then there's outwardly that we have very little outer form. We don't have ritual. We don't have initiations. We have these meditation groups and these meetings, and we have about 800 people following this path, and it's now established in the West. And in the spring, I officially announced that my son would take over from me when I, not today or tomorrow, but eventually, that it's all, that work has been done. It exists, and he will continue the work. He's been trained by Bhaisap and by me to continue the work. So it's established. It'll be here for our children, grandchildren. But somewhere at the same time, I'm stepping back, because that work has been done. And one of the things I've learned over the years is when you've done something, not to continue doing it. I give you a simple example, which is a very, very old Sufi teaching, which I think is Junaid, I'm not quite sure, when he said, the first step is to remember your fault. That's like working on the shadow. You remember your faults. And the second step is forgetting your faults. You have to leave it behind. And I've seen people who do psychological work after they just should have stopped doing psychological work. And it just goes on forever. So it's an important lesson, when something is done, to stop doing it. And what I was told very clearly is that this path is established. I don't have to look after it in the same way, because it's done. I've got other things to do. But that means that that responsibility is now passed on to you, and particularly those who've really been living this path for 10, for 20 years. It's your responsibility. And without saying anything of this, somebody who came to California from Germany said that they had a dream in which they were given a scarf that was colored yellow and green. And I was there standing behind them, and I was very stern, and I said, this needs to be kept clean. And of course, yellow and green, yellow is the color of us, we're the golden Sufis, golden yellow, and green is the color of truth. And a certain work that I did, you need now to do, which is really to inwardly look after this path. Keep it clean. And you all know by now what happens when, for example, too much personal dynamics gets in the way. When everything becomes too personalized, too much about, and then it doesn't sing anymore, then it's not free anymore. And the group doesn't work anymore. I recently closed a group down because it was all too personal. It's not about you or me, it's about something else. Yes, we're there, we have to be included. But it's really about truth, it's about yellow and green. And what I've been told is it's time now for the people who've been in the group for a number of years, who've done the inner work, who have that inner connection, is to look after it. It doesn't mean you tell it to anybody else. It just means you do that work. You look after it. It's yours. This path is yours. A number of you, hopefully more than a number, hopefully most, have made a lifetime's commitment to it. I don't know if you're aware this path is a living being. It's a living energy. It's not a set of teachings in a book. In fact, when I was thinking this morning, you know, when the first few years when I came to the group, there wasn't any books, there weren't any lectures. There was just a living presence. There was just a transmission. There was just this love and power. It's alive. And We have kept it alive. This is really important to understand, because, you know, Mrs. Tweedy gave her life's blood to keeping it alive, and I've done the same. It's alive. It's not something that was written about in a book. It's a living, pure Naqshbandi transmission that has been brought to the West for you and those who come after you. And in some ways, it depends upon what you do with it. It will continue, but at the same time, you need to look after it, those of you who have a certain maturity, who have a certain inner, a dab, I would say, inner, the right attitude. You need to make sure that you keep that right attitude, and that the meditation groups keep that right attitude. And it's, of course, what I am saying is much deeper than what I'm talking about is much deeper than what I am saying, because most of what happens on this path happens very much in the inner world. But there has been this change. A certain work has been done, and now it's for you to take responsibility for this path. Not for the people who've just come, no. Say the people the first 5, 6, 8 years or so, you know, you need to ground yourself. You need to do the inner work. You need to do the zikr so that it becomes automatic. If it hasn't become automatic by 10 years, hey, you know, you haven't done it. The meditation should be, it's your meditation. It's your way of being with God, your way of going into the silence, your way of opening the gates of grace. So people who've just come, no, they can't, not ready yet to take responsibility, because they haven't got to do this work. You have to learn the principles. What does it mean, solitude in the crowd, to outwardly be with the people, inwardly to be with God? How do you live that in everyday life? How do you... You know, Bahauddin said about awareness of breath, the greater your awareness of breath, the stronger your inner path. What does that mean? That's something you discover it. Awareness of breath gives you a certain inner stability and inner strength, because you're going from something to nothing. You're making the greatest journey. There isn't anything more you can do in an incarnation. And from a mystical point of view, to go from something to nothing, to go from existence to non-existence, to go from your existence to baka, to abiding in God, to living every day in the presence of God, as a companion, as a friend. The real essence of the path is the transmission, which is why when it came from India, there were no books, there wasn't even a group. What Mrs. Tweedy brought back was a living tradition in the heart, was her connection to her teacher. That was all. And it's interestingly, when I was sent to America first to lecture, and I was 36, I'd never lectured. I'd been a high school English teacher. And she suddenly sent me off to America to lecture. And I just got one thing I remember when I was flying to California. It was just an inner experience that just said, the help of the guru is in your heart. That is all you need to know. And in a way, that is the essence of the path, the help of the guru in the heart. If one talks about belonging, that is, for me, the real belonging is to my sheikh, is to Baisab. And through that belonging, through that connection within the heart, that is the transmission of love, that is the connection. That is what came down for 800 years, from person to person to person to person, all the way from Bukhara to northern India. Just this connection in the heart. That is the essence. Without that, there will be no path. Without that, there will be no reason for you sitting here. There will be no chemistry. There would be nothing. It is just this love, and it is given. That is the gift. That is why Baisab said this path is effortless. 90% is given. 99% is given. You're given it. What you do with it is your business. And some people really make use of it, and other people don't. And that is their business. If you knew how precious it is, you would be So that is the inner, that is the essence. And then, like everything, it has a container, it has a body. The great ones, when they designed how to bring this path to the West, and the container it should have, they decided to make Sufi group the container. I was fortunate because I was there from the beginning and saw how this group was slowly formed. And in fact, how few people who were there at the beginning remained, only very few people. It was made out of love and made out of human beings. It was, for many years, it was just a small group of us met every Friday at Mrs. Tweedy's, with the trains going by on Kilburn train tracks. And then it slowly got bigger, and then slowly the groups, and then I was sent to America and made groups in different parts of America, and then group in Australia, and Gillian made a group in South Africa. It's very traditional. Bahauddin said, ours is a path of group discussion. We meet as group, in a group. Not everybody can come to a group, and that's okay, but generally, the work we do, part of our practice is to meet once a week in a group, and just to meditate, and we share dreams, have a cup of tea, and we share dreams, or we discuss things. But that is the outer container for this inner essence. And that is how those who look after our spiritual path decided that it should come to the West. And that is now your responsibility to look after. What I'm talking about it has to do with certain energy transmission. That's all I can say. But that is this, the inner essence is this transmission from heart to heart. It was Tweedy's connection to Baisab. It's why we sat with her. And it's what I got given, what I will pass on. Without that, there is no path, but it needs a container in the West. And the container is the meditation groups that we have. And they've been designed very specifically. It seems that they're not formal, but they're actually very formal. We meditate. We have a cup of tea together, which is important. I didn't understand that when I first came. It took me about 6 years of eating chocolate biscuits to understand the importance of just being together as human beings. Bahauddin is very strict, actually. He says in the group you should only talk about spiritual things, but I don't think that's good in the West. I think that's more to do with an Eastern heritage. I think in the West it's more important just to be together. To realize the human dimension. We're all companions. Like Rumi says, it's easier to go to the tax collector with a group of friends than going on your own. And it's why the second book I wrote was in the company of friends, because that was this human connection. And one of my favorite Sufis, great Sufi, Abu Sa'id, who said, we recognize each other by our smell like horses. And people come together and they small a group. And it's very organic, it's very non-hierarchical, and it works. As I say, looking around, there aren't power struggles, there aren't power dynamics, there aren't worked for 20, 25 years. So I think I can say that it works. Occasionally it gets a bit caught up in personalities, or somebody wants to try to take over, but they can't because it's not how it's set up. And it appears to be very informal, but it's actually very, very formal. Companionship is a very important part of the Sufi journey. Companionship, friendship, spiritual friendship. The friendship that belongs to the soul when there's a resonance from soul to soul. Some of us can't stand each other on the personal level, which I understand. I once mentioned that to Mrs. Tweedy, and she said, well, we weren't all friends in the past, you know. It's okay. You don't have to get on with everybody. You don't have to be nice to everybody. Adab is not being nice. It's being respectful. If you want just to sit in silence, that's fine. Adab is an inner attitude. It's not to do with outer patterns of behavior. It has to do with an inner respect for the other person. But there is this quality of companionship that, again, is actually very, very much part of the Naqshbandi tradition. Ours is not the path of formality of sheikhhood. Ours is a path of friendship, of companionship. Other paths do it differently. They have different ways. They have different containers. Most are more formal and more structured. Companionship is very much part of this path. It's a companionship of the heart. It's just a feeling of the heart of belonging. We belong together. As I said, when this young woman came, I said, you belong with the Sufis and the Sufis belong with God. That's why I started this talk with this poem from Rumi, be with those who mix with God as honey blends with milk, with those who say whatever comes and goes, whatever rises and sets is not what I love. Now look, yes, on a human level, we are caught up in the 10,000 things, and that's okay up to a point. Outwardly to be with the people, outwardly we are involved in life. And life at the moment is very cluttered and confusing. But inwardly, we are with God. And there in that space, we are also together. Be with those who mix with God as honey blends with milk. I love that. Very simple. With those who say anything that comes and goes, that rises and sets, is not what I love. Because that is the inner focus, that we are with a love and a lover, a beloved that is eternal, that is present in every moment and also beyond even our idea of the beyond. In the end, it's really just about love. And the love that we have for each other is also belongs to the love we have for God. It's no difference. It's a very austere love. For many years, I would quote that poem of Rumi when he says, different degrees of domination and servitude are what you know as love. But love is different. It arrives complete just there, like the moon at the window. Seek only that of which you have no clue. Desire only that of which you have no hope. This is not the Oxus River or some little creek. This is the shoreless sea. Here swimming ends always in drowning. I always loved that last line. Here swimming ends always in drowning. Because this journey is to extinction. It is to the dust. It is to what is beyond our own existence. It is to that infinite ocean of love in which there is no self.